so much. Thank you, Linda. And now we have Barbara Reed, who is a well-known consultant in the area of record keeping in Australia and internationally.
Thank you very much. My interest in this is many. I've been looking at WikiLeaks and finding it a very fascinating topic of conversation and study. And what it's done for me has jolted my understanding of the world. And I think it is one of those things that has jolted a whole lot of understandings. It's questioned a whole lot of institutions. It's questioned who makes the rules. It's created an environment where we can actually take stock of, oh my goodness, there's a new agenda going on here. So I think for archivists and record-keeping people, so I'm going to talk from that perspective very much, it jolts us, and so it should. So that's what I'm going to concentrate on. I'm not going to talk about some of the other incredibly interesting things that WikiLeaks does raise. I want to think about how we can take advantage of the fact that records are now being talked about as front page news, as agents of change and agents of power. I mean, if you think about this, this is a fantastic opportunity for us, and we're not there. Can I tell you, we're not there. The number of people who have actually taken this up in a challenging and responsive way, I think, has been fairly feeble within our profession, internationally. So what does that mean? And I want to go back to the comment that Anne made at the very beginning, which was that Assange certainly, and certainly the media, is claiming that this is a digital archive. That's our language, that's our territory. I think we need to probe whether this is a digital archive. Is this a digital archive? And if it's not, well, what is a digital archive? And can we look at WikiLeaks in the terms of perhaps it giving us a glimpse into the functionality of what archives might be, and then thinking about how we might reconfigure what we're doing or rethink about what we're doing technologically? I guess the underlying point is that I think we can look at WikiLeaks and their conduct as reinventing our stuff without reference to our stuff, and they're doing it different. So what can we take from that? The first proposition I'm going to put to you is that the time-based processes that we work on are broken. Access is broken. That is my proposition. The time-based elapsed, they've been shaky for a while, let's face it. The FOI-type agenda, the GIPR agenda, hasn't quite aligned with the archives agenda. We've got different state jurisdictions with different rules. We've got bits and pieces of legislation that have been put into the access framework to deal with specific things like personal information, health information, whatever. So it was a fairly shaky framework, I think, or has been for a while. And the open data, the reduction of the closed period, all of these things I think are indicating to us that the agenda has changed. But we're still persisting with our time-based release. I think this is, we just have to say, okay, now it's broken. I think the other thing that WikiLeaks does is say security classification is broken. So Stephen showed the public service security manual, whatever it's called now, and we know that this. We also know that this has been broken for a while. So again, coming out of the US, which is a wonderful place to find attention to many of these things, there's the National Declassification Centre, I think, that's been established.
Board,
under, NARA is one of the bodies that are doing it. Just let me read the only bit I will read. Over the next 25 years, federal agencies are facing massive volume, 1.7 billion pages of classified textual records that, based on a 2008 review statistics, will take over 33 years to complete the initial review. It's broken. I would similarly argue that our appraisal stuff is broken. If what we're doing is trying to select stuff from this vast information environment, we're working on the wrong premise. That's just not going to work in the world that we're facing. After the event, time-based, oh, we'll look at it when it's old or whatever. So what am I saying to you? And yes, none of you will be surprised to say that actually we have to change our thinking from the end product thinking that we have embedded in our practices to be a whole lot more responsive to the whole process of formation of archives and we have to actively intervene in different points. Need I tell you that that's continuum thinking? But anyway, you'll know that that's what I'm talking about. So what is a digital archive? Or what's an archive? So I'm just going to throw some ideas around, and they're very speculative, but they're coming out of what I think WikiLeaks talks to us about. So I think in the world we're facing at the moment, what is an archive is actually something that's defined by the community. A community. Who's a community? Whoever says they're a community. Who belongs? Whoever the community lets in. They are defining what their archive is. And you can see this on the internet everywhere. So if we say, well, an archive is actually what people want to deal with, it kind of takes the power away from some of those operations of state, I think, and you start to get very much much greater diversity out there. Now, one of the problems with that is if you allow one, you have to allow them all. You might not agree with them. There are many people who do not agree with WikiLeaks. In the internet environment, if you're going to let one community do it, you have to give everybody the same kind of respect and rights. So that could be pretty challenging. And I think what might define a community is control over their patch. So actually, the WikiLeaks community, if I can use that term, have fairly ferocious controls over what can happen to their stuff. And we can see that story in the way they interacted with the old media and rights and who gets to say what can happen. WikiLeaks actually breaks a whole lot of the taboos of government-defined communities. And I think WikiLeaks also breaks a whole lot of or points out that all of these boundaries between organisations have been undermined by the technology. So we're talking about a very unstable situation where what's work, what's home, what's personal, what's professional are very much merging in the Web 2 environment that Stephen was describing. So I think that's fairly confronting to us to work out, well, gosh, if everybody's defining archive, what do we as people who think we're archivists have to say about that? I wanted to talk a little bit about the notion of trust, because this is another one of the ones that come, you know, what is an archive? Well, it's a trusted organisation. Okay, so what is trusted all about? I don't think WikiLeaks is a trusted organisation. In fact, I think if you use that particular measure, you'd probably have to say it doesn't actually comply, because internally, we don't know much about the way they are doing what they're doing. But I think it is a trusted organisation for a community that it chooses to support. Now, if you twist that on its head and think, okay, so who's the community that WikiLeaks is supporting? I think what they're doing is saying, we've got many audiences and many kind of things. The one we're actually protecting is the whistleblowing community. That's our primary relationship. That's the one that feeds our material. You know, so we're putting our trust component into that. And if you listen to Assange, you'll find that he's very strong on it's protect the sources stuff, but also protect the processes. And you can also see that being played out through some of the weird and wonderful subpoenas against the Twitter logs and whatever that is happening in the US courts. So, I think the notion of trust that we kind of say, oh, well, if you've got part of being a digital archive is that we're trusted. I'm not sure that that's necessarily the case. Maybe that's still valid. Maybe that is still valid. But I think that the absence of some of the stuff that's in WikiLeaks is very fertile ground for exploring it. Will WikiLeaks survive? Is that a component of a trusted organisation? Notwithstanding Cassie's comments on the assertion that this is going to live forever, if you look back at one of the mechanisms that we have for this is going to last forever, and that is the Internet Archive, which on the Wayback Machine, actually they've stripped, and tell me it's not, my assumption is that there was a little bit of interference about what has been archived in the Internet Archive, because that's not their agenda to actually defend. So, but there's a whole gap, there's a big gap in the WikiLeaks organisation archive record in the Internet Archive. But does it matter if WikiLeaks archives isn't sustainable? I mean, I think that's an interesting question to ponder, and particularly in relation to what we think an archive is. So, Cassie also raised the issue about whether the records are authentic. WikiLeaks started out and they essentially said, not my problem. What we're going to do is put it out there and the power of the crowd will question and they'll assert and they'll work out what is acceptable and what isn't. Now, that part of their endeavour didn't actually work particularly well. People got overwhelmed and, you know, they didn't actually do the wiki stuff in the original. So you'll find that in the subsequent leaks, and particularly, interestingly, when we're dealing with the American leaks, which are volume, okay? So the American leaks start to introduce the concept of volume as opposed to single instance documents. Really what I think they say is you can't let this stuff out without a story to go with it. And the story in the WikiLeaks example is the alliance with the old media and the filtering to deal with particular jurisdictions. It's a deliberate ploy. But actually, the authenticity of the stuff on WikiLeaks is proven by the reaction to it. So the State Department actually worked out the authenticity of... That's where we know how they're authentic, because the State Department went, oh, my God. So that says authenticity is contingent, which we kind of knew, but it's a really interesting thing for us to think about in relation to WikiLeaks and digital stuff. Is this stuff original? No, obviously it's not original, because the originals are in the system that created them. So what we've got is, at best, an authentic copy. Does it matter? What's an original in the digital world? I think we have to give over some of this kind of singularity of notion of original. But WikiLeaks is a miscellany of stuff. Okay, if you want to look at WikiLeaks as a collection, not a word I use often in relation to archives, but I think it is a genuine collection. It's a miscellany of stuff that's been put in. And in some ways you could argue that, in fact, the stuff is random and combined by a philosophy rather than a connection. So actually this is stuff that's been ripped out of its originating context. It's stuff that is not accompanied by the metadata and the stuff that we love. So it's actually fairly... I just make an aside. There's some serious parallels to the way we've been doing archival digitisation that we could think about ripping things out of context. We don't privilege the object. We privilege a process. However, just to go back to that, one of the things that WikiLeaks is showing us is that you can't just dump stuff out there and hope to have it understood and taken up. You do need some contextuality, and I think they're showing us some really interesting things about how that might work in a web world. So it's about connections, and it's about letting people hyperlink to it. It's about using Reddit and Twitter and all of these other sources to actually create this community, which is searchable on the cable number. You know, you can actually go and see all of the stuff that's been linked to a particular cable in really interesting ways. So WikiLeaks themselves obviously got that you couldn't just chuck this stuff out, and they'd done some basic indexing. Cassie showed you the tables on the side of the cable. But now what's happening is that third parties are getting involved and they're actually creating new interfaces. So you've got cable viewers, you've got maps. Cassie's shows you the Afghanistan map, Google map with the dots about where the war logs were issued. So I think that's a really interesting thing about, you know, how do we use and how do we maximise third parties? What are we going to let them do? And there's a little bit of that happening in the open data arena, but not enough, and not for current records. Okay, so we're still back in that time shadow world. And it also gets us to the challenges of big data. And I'm just about the ending. But WikiLeaks, I think, hit the challenges of big data. And if you look at the way they've approached things, they've changed the way they're doing things with the mass release. So 250,000 cables. Well, just put that into perspective of our own stuff. I mean, many of us would have, or some of us anyway, would have 250,000 series. Let alone individual instances of documents in it. So where they got challenged by 250,000 instances of documents, well, we've got much bigger challenges, and I don't think we've even started to come to grips with that. My last point, I guess, is about the whole issue of location, and Stephen mentioned this too, which is the cloud. WikiLeaks in some ways is a great case study of why you wouldn't put all the stuff in one place, because someone can shut it down, you know? And the interesting, really quite interesting stuff about how to disseminate and distribute and what it means. I would argue, actually, that WikiLeaks is not particularly radical. If you think about the way they've been doing it, they're still controlling the packaging of the content. They're not distributing the content, they're distributing the package as mirror sites. So it's about what is their control level. And I think it's still quite... there's more to go there, I think. The last thing... I'm at the point of summarising what I'm trying to say. The way we've done it, the time-lapse stuff, is not the way we're going to... we should be approaching this environment. We should be... celebrating diversity, thinking about formation of archives, putting our effort at the front, working out how to address these things at the pointy end, not worrying about the stuff when it's 20, 30, 40 years old. One, that's not when the power relationships are coming, and we're in a world where everybody's an archivist, and I think that many people would go there, and there's a huge democratisation of records and archives, and it's actually a fearsomely important political and powerful lever in our society at the moment.
Thank you, Barbara. Now, do we want a quick break before we go on to questions, or should we go straight ahead? Straight ahead, cool. Okay, now, Hamish has offered, bless him, to provide a roving mic. That's important because if you want